This is the SF Signal Podcast. I am your host. My name is Patrick Hester, and if I don't mention it's the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal Podcast, John DiNardo will not send me my cookie. So it is the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal Podcast. You can usually find me, your host, online by searching ATFMB, all things from my brain. Also, if you're interested, I will be a media guest of honor at Capricorn in Wheeling, Illinois at the Westin North Shore, February 12th to the 15th. Come by for Valentine's Day. Bring me cookies. Oh, and Anelia will be there too from the Functional Nerd. So, you know, he doesn't like cookies. Bring me the cookies. Okay, tonight I want to talk with Gene Cavalos.
Cavalos.
See, I knew I was going to already screw it up with the Odyssey Writing Workshop. But before I do, I did want to take one moment and remind people that Hugo nominations are now open. Anyone who was a voting member as of... It was January 31st, 2015. If you were a voting member or a member of the 2014, 2015, or 2016 Worldcons, by the end of the day on January 31st, 2015, you are now eligible to nominate for the Hugo Awards. So that means that if you have ever sat there complaining because your favorite book, author, editor, comic book, movie, TV show, or whatever it is, didn't get nominated, or if you've ever sat there thinking the Hugos aren't diverse enough, now is your chance to make a change. Your vote and your nomination does count. If everyone listening to this podcast nominated and voted for the Hugo Awards, people would freak out. So believe it or not, you have the power here to choose and to make changes in the Hugo voting system. In the interest of full disclosure, SF Signal has recused itself from consideration in the fanzine category, but many of our contributors are eligible for awards in various categories. You can check them all out at sfsignal.com. This podcast and all the other podcasts part of the SF Signal family are all eligible in the fan cast. That includes Karen Lord and Karen Burnham's SF Crossing the Gulf, John Stevens, Fred Kish, and Jeff Patterson's The Three Horsemen, and of course me. So if you want to, you can go out there and nominate people. There's wonderful books and comics and movies and everything out there. Go nominate. Gene.
Hello, Patrick.
How are you doing?
Excellent.
I'm sorry you had to listen to all that.
It was fascinating. I was deeply moved.
So the Odyssey Writing Workshop. This is you guys do more than just the 6-week program.
Right. That's what we started with 20 years ago, the 6-week workshop in person in Manchester, New Hampshire each summer. But then we found a lot of people wanted help with their writing and couldn't get away for 6 weeks or wanted something a little bit different. So we added a critique service where people can submit several short stories or an excerpt from a novel or an entire novel and get professional level, very thorough, instructional, helpful feedback on it. We added online classes that are held each winter. I just finished up my course on showing and telling and fantastic fiction. Those are held through GoToMeeting Live, so people can have as close to a live class experience as possible. We announce those in October, and people apply in December, and then they're held in January and February. We also offer lots of free resources. We have our monthly podcasts. We have a weekly online discussion salon, so you can come and share your webcams and share your problems with other writers and talk to them. We've got lots of writing and publishing tips, and I'm just starting to offer consultations, too, for people if they're, like, stuck on a project and don't know what to do with it and want to talk it out. We can do that.
So if there's someone out there listening right now who is a science fiction and fantasy fan and they've always wanted to write a story and they think they might have a little bit of talent, they might be able to use one of your critique services without really like jumping in for a full 6-week course.
Absolutely. I mean, that gives you a really clear sense of what your strengths and weaknesses are as a writer and what are some of the things that you can do to address those weaknesses and some specific ideas for the particular stories or novel that you've sent in. People have found it really helpful. You know, there's a lot of places where you can get feedback, but sometimes it's not as helpful as it might be. Sometimes it's not as informed or thorough as it might be. And getting feedback from somebody that you have confidence in, that you believe what they're going to tell you, is really important. I mean, even if the person is giving you good feedback, but you don't really know who they are, and so you don't have a lot of faith in them, you might discount what they say, even though it's good advice, because, you know, hey, it's just somebody on the internet and you don't know. So why should I rewrite my whole story just because of that?
Right.
So there's kind of an important part of that. You have to believe that the person giving you the feedback knows what they're talking about.
So when you talk about, you know, there is lots of people out there who can give you feedback. It's not necessarily constructive when mom tells you, yeah, I love it. It's great.
My mother always hates my stuff. She used to love it, but then I taught her how to critique, and that was a big mistake. Yes, exactly. You give it to your family and friends, and hey, that's good for, you know, if you need some confidence, if you need some positive reinforcement, and we all do sometimes, give it to those people you know are going to say that they love it. But on the other hand, I know a lot of writers who discount anything nice that anyone says about their work, and yes, would especially discount the nice things said by friends and family, and so don't really get the good feeling about it that they might. It's really important when you get feedback from somebody that you have confidence, knows what they're talking about, that you listen to both the positive and the negative. That the positive, if this person is giving you good feedback, the positive is not just being nice. The positive is showing you the things that you're doing well and the things that you can really emphasize and bring out and that are going to make you special as a writer. You know, it's important to deal with weaknesses, very important, because those things can kill your story. But probably addressing those weak areas is not going to make you a standout, memorable author. What's going to make you a standout, memorable author is capitalizing on those strengths, those things that you do well and that are special about your writing. And so being able to bring those weak areas up to a level where they're not crippling your story and yet also bring out the good parts more, bring out your strengths more. That's the combination that you want to go for, rather than just dismissing, oh, people are just saying I'm nice at this, but to really take that as a valuable piece of information.
Sure. Well, and to look at it through the lens of science fiction and fantasy, it can be very different and sometimes difficult to find good critique partners and people who can really look at your stuff and say whether or not it's good. I have been part of several critique groups. I'm semi-sort of I guess I am a co-founder of one here now. I started to say I'm sort of a co-founder, but I am a co-founder. And we like to encourage, you know, people from who are genre and not genre to come together in a group. Because the person who's never read science fiction and fantasy can pick up on things that the rest of us who read so much of it don't. And vice versa. And so to go out and find someone or some service like what you're talking about is incredibly valuable, because a lot of times we become blind to our own stuff and the people around us become blind to it. So it's always good to go out and find someone else who can give us, you know, like you said, it's like intelligent feedback.
I think if you have the same people looking at your stuff and nobody different,
right.
I mean, there's a value in having the same people, because they can tell if you've progressed and if you've changed anything and, you know, if you're improving. So that's good. But they can kind of become blind after a while.
Yes.
To certain weak areas, or they can just kind of excuse them because they're used to that's the way that you write. And particularly if you've revised a piece and they've looked at a previous version and now they're looking at the revision, that's even hard for me. Because you're kind of seeing it through the lens of this previous version, and you're like, oh, well, that's better, and that's better, and that's better. But maybe the whole revision doesn't hold together. And you kind of get excited if people did stuff that you suggested that they do. You're like, oh, yes, she took my suggestion. It's wonderful. And that's not always the case. So it is good to get some fresh eyes once in a while on your work.
Well, and you mentioned teaching your mom to critique. Giving a good critique is not always easy, and it is kind of a skill that has to be learned. But on top of that, do you also teach the author to receive a critique?
Oh, absolutely. At the Odyssey Summer Workshop, I spend a couple of hours talking about how to receive a critique and how to make the most of it, because I think revision is so important in the writing process, you know, that it should be, you should spend much more time on revision than you spend on drafting, and that revision can improve your work by such a huge amount. Improving your draft, you know, say how good is your draft today versus how good will your draft be a year from now, hopefully it'll be a little bit better, but you can really improve your revisions much more. And so to do that, you need to have the feedback, and you need to listen to the feedback and accept the feedback. And there are so many pitfalls. When I started Odyssey, I just thought, you know, oh, I love working with writers. This will be fun. It'll be like a class, and I'll meet writers, and I'll spend 6 weeks with them and teach them stuff, and that'll be great. I didn't realize how much a workshop like that challenges people on all levels, challenges that their ego, their ethics, their morals, their purpose in life, their personality, challenges them in so many ways to accept, you know, having people tell you all of these things that are wrong with something that you created, that you hopefully believe in and love, is very hard. And yet that's an important path to improvement. So being able to accept that without lashing out, without arguing back. I spent years and years, oh my gosh, arguing back in my head silently, because I'm a shy person. So when I get angry, it's all inside. You know, they're saying the critique, and I'm, instead of listening to it, I'm just arguing back. No, you're wrong. I did explain that. That was on page 3.
Weren't you paying attention? Why weren't you paying attention?
You were clearly unfit to read my brilliant prose. And I wasted so many years not listening and not taking into account people's reactions. So I understand that very well. And so I try to explain how to, you know, just let the comments seep in rather than trying to solve them while you're hearing the critique, or fight back against them, or despair and decide you're never going to write another word because you're no good. Or, you know, reject that they're all idiots and they know nothing and you're just going to go on your way of doing what you were doing before. But to listen and to allow it to seep in and to allow it to connect with what you thought the work was about and how you thought it was working, and to get a better sense of how does the reader experience it. Because that's so hard for the author to know.
I always say, don't take it personally.
Mm-hmm.
It's not personal at all. Don't argue. Don't try to, you know, someone says, well, I didn't really get this. Well, it's because it's this, you know, I just sit there. I'm very quiet when I'm getting critique. I just sit there and I nod. I take my notes. If I'm asked a direct question, I answer it, but I don't offer any information. I just, like you said, I soak it in. I let it go in. And when it's done, I'll look at the person. I'll say, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Cause I mean, it's huge. They're giving you feedback.
It is. It's invaluable.
Now, are you familiar with the term pickup group?
No, I'm not.
So this is a World of Warcraft thing. You'd be on the server and you'd be by yourself, and you need a group to go into a dungeon, and so you would get a pug going, which is PUG, pickup group. So I was in a pickup group of critiquers one time, and it was basically you submitted a couple of pages and went around the table and it was critiqued. And one person at the table, dressed to the nines, I mean, just dressed to kill, and you could tell, you know, very professional kind of person, submits their pages, very confident. There was a published author was part of the group. and very well respected, and gave a critique on these two pages, and this person stormed out of the room.
Wow.
You could tell they were expecting, you know, the pat on the back and, wow, this is the greatest thing I've ever read. And that's not what they got. And so they just stormed out. I'm assuming that in the 6-week program, tempers are going to flare every once in a while.
Not so much. Not so much. Maybe in the past, but I'm trying to think of examples like in the last 5 years or even 10 years. I think it doesn't happen in the critique circle anyway.
That's good.
People can get upset. Once in a while, somebody might cry, but that's rare also. Usually it happens outside the critique circle after, you know, I'll find out somebody was really upset and they were crying in their Aww. Room. Then I'll go visit them and give them some chocolate and we'll talk it over. And I'll probably eat all the chocolate, but that's okay. There's got to be some perks in there somewhere. Or, you know, somebody may feel like another person's critique was out of line, that it was too personal, or that it was, I don't know, in some way mean in the way it was phrased or something. So that's why I try to talk about all this stuff ahead of time. It's really a minefield. And if you point out to them, hey, you know, if you find yourself really angry at one person who gave you feedback, maybe it means that they hit a nerve because they said something that's really true that you don't want to know.
Sure.
Or it could be that maybe they said something inappropriate, and if they did, then talk to me and we'll discuss it and we'll figure out the right course of action. Maybe I need to talk to that person who said the inappropriate thing. But often it is that the critiquer has kind of hit a nerve. You know, these stories, even though they may be about aliens on planets far away, you know, jumping around like rabbits or whatever, that they're really deeply personal in ways that are often hidden to us that we don't even realize we're writing anything personal. We think we're writing a funny story about aliens jumping around. But then somebody may touch on that and it may then really hurt. Or sometimes the person may know this is a deeply personal story and then feel like the critiquer didn't treat it with sufficient care. So it's important to, I think, that's the danger of a pickup group. I would be very leery of that because you just don't know what you're getting into. I think it's really important to lay out the rules ahead of time and kind of, if people are not deeply experienced in critique, to explain to them some of these pitfalls and traps their mind might set for them that they need to look for.
Sure.
So that they know how to cope with them and then to be on top of it throughout the time that the critiquing is going on so that you can, you know, help address any problems before they blow up. I think that's why we don't have too many blow-ups is that we try to deal with these things as they're sort of starting to build before they get to that point.
Well, that's great. Now, we've talked a little bit about the online stuff. The actual 6-week workshop, now that takes place in June, and there's an application process for that.
Right.
And so that's open through April 8th. So is there a specific kind of writer you're looking for? Is there do you want beginners? Do you want intermediate? Do you want professionals? Do you see like a trend? Who attends this workshop?
Well, Odyssey is for pretty advanced writers who many of them have already published. Sometimes it's being published in a professional paying pro level magazine. Sometimes it's in a semi-pro. Sometimes it's in a, you know, college literary magazine. But most people have published something, and that to me shows their level of seriousness and commitment that they've actually gotten something out the door. But that's not required. Sometimes people are afraid to submit or they don't know how. And so I understand that, and that's not the most important thing. I can easily teach them how to do that. I think some of the most important criteria for for figuring out, is this the right time for you to apply to Odyssey? First, do you have a sense of what you want to write, so that you have a sense of who you are as a writer, what you have to say that nobody else is saying, and believe that that is important? And coming into a workshop with that really helps, because when people start critiquing your work and pointing out weaknesses, you get very tempted to try to write safe and to try to write the things that they will like. So if they all liked this story about, you know, the people in the hotel who chopped their guests into hamburger and fed them to the guests, then you might start think you should write a story like that too, because everybody thought that was delightful. And that may not be at all the kind of thing that you enjoy writing.
And now I'm going to Chicago in a couple of days, and I will not be able to get a hotel hamburger in the hotel.
Thank you. Stay away from it. Yeah. You're welcome. And I don't even want to tell you about the fruit cocktail.
Oh, no.
So I found that I went to an MFA program in creative writing back in the day, and which is one of the things that motivated me to create Odyssey, because the people there, they were very nice, and they tried to help me, and they helped me some, but they didn't know much of anything about fantasy or science fiction, so they couldn't really tell me how I was doing in a lot of respects in my work. They gave me a lot of style help, but not a lot of other help. Anyway, my point was that...
We were talking, about... well, before you go there, actually, there's something interesting that you just said. When you went for your MFA, there weren't anybody there who knew science fiction and fantasy, and they weren't necessarily able to help you. One of the things that I've noticed, because I've been part of several critique groups now, I was part of one that was a 501c3, which is what Odyssey is as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And we would take anybody, beginners, all the way up to, published authors, whoever, we would help. And one of the things that I noticed is if you read a lot of general fiction and then you come into science fiction, and let's say you read general fiction and you write general fiction, then you come into science fiction. So let's say you're writing a Tom Clancy-esque thriller novel, spy-fi kind of thing. And then you come over and you decide to write about the aliens who are chopping up people in the hotel and making hamburgers. The science fiction and fantasy editor doesn't like head hopping, right? They want clear point of view characters as you're writing your story.
Right.
They don't like the head hopping, which you get in the Tom Clancy novel, which is, the guy walks into the room and he sits down and he looks around, and across the room, another guy, now you're in his head and he's looking at the guy who just walked in the room. And then now you're back in the first guy's head. They don't like that. That's not something that everybody knows immediately when they sit down to write science fiction and fantasy. So I could see, is there other things like that, that you go to the MFA program where they don't really know science fiction and fantasy, but you come to Odyssey and you do know science fiction and fantasy, and you know what the editors are looking for and wanting?
Right. I mean, that's what motivated me. That's one of the two things that motivated me to start Odyssey, was I thought, after going through that MFA program, I thought, wouldn't it be great if there was something like an MFA program, but all the teachers and all the students loved science fiction, fantasy, and horror, and they all believed in its value as an art form, and they all, believed that you could strive for excellence in that field. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Because there are, things that genre fiction tends to do differently than literary fiction, for sure. I mean, we tend to have stronger plots. We need characters who have goals. And those goals cause struggles, because there's obstacles and they have to overcome the obstacles or die trying. And that's something that I didn't hear anything about in the MFA program at all. So there are many lessons that you learn at Odyssey that you wouldn't learn at an MFA program.
And is it Do you think, having gone through the MFA program and now having taught at Odyssey for so long, is science fiction, fantasy, and horror, is it harder?
Oh, I think it is. I think it's way harder. Because you have to write a good story, which is what all those people in the MFA program and writing literary fiction have to do. They have to write a good story, but we also have to fulfill the specific requirements of the genre. And I don't want to make it sound like the genre is a straitjacket. It's not. It's huge and it's malleable, and you can push the envelope and you can be super creative. But there are certain expectations that readers have, and the author either needs to fulfill those expectations or give them something even better in exchange for not fulfilling the expectation. So I would say it's more difficult.
I think it is, and I've probably also completely derailed you from your original thought, but that's okay.
I remember what it was, though.
Oh, okay, go.
Because it ties into the whole hamburger thing.
Nice.
Thank you. So when I went into the MFA program, I met writers writing many different types of fiction. None of them were writing science fiction or fantasy. I was the weird girl doing that. But they were writing quite different things. And when they came out of the program 2 years later, they were kind of all writing the same thing. Except for me, the piece of gristle in the hamburger, as we went through the meat grinder, I would not grind up. So anyway, I don't want to do that to anyone at Odyssey. I don't want anyone to come in with, you know, really cool, fresh, interesting ideas or an original voice and then have that lost because they were uncertain about what they wanted to do with their writing, and they felt, and they became overly influenced by the others. So while I think it's really important to listen to all the feedback you receive, I also think it's important to have that kind of centering of what you want to do as a writer. So that's a really important aspect that I think that I look for in applicants. I want to have a sense that they feel that, and you know, you write a little essay on your application and talk about how much you've written and what your goals are. And so that helps me get a sense of that. On the other hand, even though I want them to have this center and this certainty and belief in themselves, I also want them to have a readiness to listen and change their process. It's not just a matter of writing better, but it's a matter of changing how you write, because the process determines the results. And so if people are not willing to, if they become so set in their ways, they've written so much and they're so sure of what they're doing that they don't want to change it or experiment with it, then I'm very limited in how much I can help them. So that would be an important criteria, would be to be willing to listen and change.
Sure, which kind of brings us back even to the critiquing. Because if you're not willing to be able to sit there and accept a critique, that's kind of a problem.
Yeah. Well, at a workshop, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's plenty of writers who have succeeded without going to workshops and who, you know, study on their own, who are not comfortable getting feedback, who don't feel that process is helpful for them. And I understand that. Writers come in all different varieties. Our brains are very different in the way they work, and they determine how the stories come out of our heads and get onto the paper. So one thing that I try to do at Odyssey, and that I feel I'm pretty good at since I worked as an editor before I became a teacher, is to find the right process for each individual student, to work with that person, to talk about, okay, what's your process now? And that process leads to stories that have weaknesses X, Y, and Z, and strengths A and B. And so if we want the process to yield a result without weaknesses X, Y, and Z, how can we change the process? And to work with that student in a way that makes sense for him or her to change. So I'm not, you know, like forcing people to write outlines if they don't want to write outlines. But okay, if you don't write an outline, that's going to lead to certain problems. And how are we going to address those in alternate ways?
I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about, Gene.
I gave it simply as a random example, Patrick.
And let me tell you something else. No one knows the way our listeners know how different my brain is. Seriously.
But there are all things from your brain.
There are all things from my brain. You know, it's funny because outlining for me is very difficult. It's interesting that in your FAQ, you talk about short fiction versus long fiction. And so the question in the FAQ is, can I work on a novel at Odyssey or must I write only short stories? And you basically say it's not a requirement. You're not like, absolutely, you have to write short stories, but you do suggest that people start with short fiction because it's easier. How'd you put it here? You can learn and improve more quickly when writing short pieces.
Right. That's for sure. I see it all the time. The people who write short fiction make faster progress. On the other hand, I know that there are writers, and I'm kind of one of them, who think in long ideas and who have a very hard time thinking short and don't really get excited about writing short. I think it's, if you can get excited about writing a short story, and I would encourage people at Odyssey and elsewhere, people who are trying to improve their writing, to try to get excited about writing short, then they can write the whole thing. You know, it can be critiqued and examined as a whole. We can see how it works. Is it unified? Is the beginning and the end? Do they work together? And all of those things that we can't do with parts of a novel. And, you know, trying to write a novel right out of the gate is like trying to write a symphony when you haven't written a jingle. That can be hard. But if people can't get excited about short story ideas, the last thing I want to do is force them to write something they don't care about, then have it ripped apart by 15 other people and told to, you know, revise and learn from it. If they don't care about it, it doesn't matter. It's not going to represent their best work. It's not going to be anything that they can learn from. They're just going to get discouraged and fail to make progress. So
I very famously, a few years ago, I started writing novels.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sat down and I decided that's what I wanted to do. I never really got into writing short stories. I just wanted to write novels. So I wrote a novel, and Gene, I will tell you right now, no one will ever read that. And then I wrote another one. No one will ever read that. And then I just kept doing that. And a couple years ago, I thought, well, you know, I really need to learn how to write short stories. So I'm going to sit down and write a short story. And so I sat down, wrote a short story. 12,000 words later, Karen Burnham, you know, read it and said, hey, this is great. Now, rewrite it is like 3,000 words. It's like, ugh, are you kidding me? Come on. So if you have, you know, you talk about wanting people who or accepting people who have written and possibly published and who are focused. Now, if they're a novelist, if that's what they've done, if they haven't published short stories before, but they want to come there and write short stories and learn how to write short stories, do you see that as harder to teach, or is that exactly the kind of thing you want?
Well, if they've never written a short story before and they come and they want to, I mean, I think it's great if they come and they want to, but certainly it'll be harder for them to produce a short story in a week when they've never written one before. But I think that's a great challenge. And mm-hmm. I encourage students at Odyssey to try things they've never done before and to fail spectacularly. If they're going to fail, just go for it. Go for it. Don't be afraid. Don't be meek. Don't be worried about what everybody's going to say about each little thing you put in the story. Write the story that you want to write. Do your best with it. You know, work yourself into exhaustion over it. And then, you know, let's see what happens. Let's see what people think about it. We usually have a couple of students at each workshop who are working on novels. Some, it's usually the kind of the opposite of the way you described it. Usually the novelists come saying they're going to work on their novel, and they submit a couple of chapters and get feedback. And then sometimes they continue and they do that for the whole workshop. But sometimes after a few chapters, they realize, you know what, I've got these other issues I need to address. And I think I could learn really well by writing a story focused on helping me learn this issue, helping me learn how to write a scene in which every scene creates a change of significance for the main character and moves the story ahead. And I think I could do that better by separating myself from my novel and going over here and writing some short stories. And once they have read all these great short stories by their classmates, they get really excited about writing stuff that they haven't written before. Trying a short story, trying maybe a subgenre that they've never really been interested in before. So that's an exciting thing when they kind of their horizons are widened and they start to see new possibilities.
Now, I'm starting to run a little bit short on time, so there's other things I wanted to ask you about. Before I do, why don't you tell folks the Odyssey Writing Workshop website?
Sure, it's odysseyworkshop.org, and that is, for people who haven't read Homer lately, it's O-D-Y-S-S-E-Y.
And applications are open through April 8th.
Yes.
For the six-week workshop, but you also do other stuff throughout the year.
Right. The critique service goes throughout the year. The online classes are announced in the fall, so you've missed out on that for this year. But all the other free resources, you know, check out our podcasts and our weekly salon and our blog. You'll find some great resources there. But yes, if they want to apply for the workshop, go to the site, click on the workshop page, click on the application. It's April 8th, and it's got to be a hard copy mailed in. So you want to give it a couple days so you don't have to spend a lot on postage. And you need a writing sample, and then to write a little bit about yourself.
Very cool. Now, Gene, in addition to all this stuff, there is a question. Have you seen Mr. Garibaldi?
What, recently? I have never met Mr. Garibaldi in person. I would love to meet Mr. Garibaldi.
So obviously, I'm hinting a little bit that you have written. You know, you don't just teach; you also do write.
Yes, in my voluminous free time.
And there may have been a couple of books there in one of my favorite universes, which is Babylon 5.
I love Babylon 5. I remember when I first heard it was coming out and it was going to be a TV series that was like a huge novel with this one big story arc. I just thought, this is brilliant. I love it. I love the fact that it has an end, that it has a beginning and an end, and then it's not just going to drag on forever. It's going to tell a story and be done with it. So I was thrilled to have the chance to write in that universe.
And you wrote several books in that universe.
Yeah, I did four. I did a standalone, and then they asked me to do a trilogy.
About the techno mages.
Yes.
Loved those characters.
And being a former astrophysicist, I really relate to them because they're doing science that appears to be magic. And you know, it's that famous quote that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, and that's exactly what's going on with them. And I thought, what kind of weird geeks are these? You know, they're doing science, but they want everyone to think that they have magical powers or something. So I was so interested in exploring what kind of people would become technomages, and how would that be done, and then, of course, Joe Straczynski, the creator of the series, had this wonderful secret behind the Technomages that was just great fun to explore and reveal in my books.
And what do you think about his plans to bring it back?
I honestly don't know about his plans to bring it back.
He always kind of talks about it. Now, I guess the rumor mill is that he might relaunch it with some movies.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of redo it.
Oh, redo it? Like a reboot?
Yep.
a reboot might not be bad. I wouldn't really want it to go on because I liked the whole idea of the ending, which means you just can't go on. But, you know, because of the various problems they had with the financing and the casting and things like that, it could be cool. I don't really know how you'd do it as a movie or a series of... maybe you could do it like as a trilogy or something. Because I liked seasons 2, 3, and 4. If you could make each one of those a movie, maybe. Or it could be like a new TV series, like Game of Thrones. A
couple of my favorite scenes ever is when Delenn rescues Babylon 5. And she confronts the Earth Force. And the Earth Force is like, no, you got to get out of her way. You know, or we're going to attack. And she's like, so? Only one human captain has ever survived battle with the Membari. He's behind me. You're in front of me. If you value your lives, be somewhere else.
They had absolutely great lines.
The other one is Ivanova when she goes off and to fight the war, and she's like, I am hell come to you. I'm the destroyer. I'm vengeance. And here I come. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that show. So you also have some other stuff out there. What are these Science of books?
Well, because of my science background, I've written a couple of science books, The Science of Star Wars and The Science of the X-Files. I started out feeling like my career goal was to become like Charlton Heston in Planet of the Apes. I wanted to... which didn't turn out too well, right. Since in the sequel he blew up the Earth and killed everyone, including himself. Mm-hmm. However, this really appealed to me as a teenager, and so I thought I wanted to be an astronaut. And so I studied astrophysics, I went to work at NASA, and when I got to NASA, I found that really what I loved was science fiction. Mm-hmm. I really loved the ideas and the ability to explore these crazy ideas that we would not be able to actually, you know, have the technology for thousands of years. I'm not going to be around for that long. But one of the things that happened when I was at NASA was I had all of these photos up on my wall of Star Wars scenes, mainly Han Solo and the Millennium Falcon. And people would come into my office and they'd look at them and they'd go, oh, that was such a great movie. Too bad it's completely scientifically unrealistic. And then I'd get all mad. It's like, no, Star Wars could happen. It could happen any second now. Because I wanted to believe. Anyway, so it was great fun to be asked to write these books where I got to explore the science behind Star Wars and these weird things that happen in the X-Files and say, okay, could it ever happen? How would it be that it would happen? What kind of technology do we need? Or, you know, could we fuse alien and human DNA in the case of the X-Files? So it was awesome. It was like being paid to watch my favorite shows and movies and then research these crazy topics that I would call these scientists about and interview them and ask them crazy questions, and they would just go with it. So it was terrific, and it gave me a lot of knowledge to write science fiction, you know, all of that. How does that science stuff work?
That's very cool. And what do you think of the new Star Wars lightsaber with the cross guard?
What is that in the...
It's in the trailer for the new JJ Wars.
Yeah, I just saw it like once, I think.
So the shows you who you're supposed to assume is like the Sith, you know, going through the forest, and they put their arm out to the right and they have this red lightsaber and it goes, and then the two little lightsaber cross guards come out.
That doesn't seem too helpful to me. It seems a little dangerous, I would say, for the wielder of the lightsaber.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta, you know, there's no match for a good blaster at your side, kid.
Nice. And then what about Van Helsing?
Well, see, there's another scientist who's fascinated with the things that seem impossible. So he's a character that I could relate to quite a bit. I edited an anthology called The Many Faces of Van Helsing, where I just asked some great writers to put together stories relating to how they imagined Van Helsing, you know, what was his past. He's this, of course, this classic character in the novel Dracula, who hunts Dracula and who uses, it's really like, you know, Dracula is a lot like Tom Clancy, which most people don't realize, but it's really a techno thriller with this very old tech. He uses these records. He records his notes on records. And he has this other, like, you know, futuristic to them technology mixed in with using garlic and crosses and stuff. So it's a really cool mashup. And I loved the idea of thinking about, you know, where did he come from? How did he get to this point? Where does he go after? What are some, putting him in different settings, a Van Helsing type of character, what would happen with him? So that was a very fun project.
It sounds like it. So putting you on the spot right now, you have to pick your favorite actor to portray Van Helsing, and you get to choose between two, Peter Cushing or Hugh Jackman.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, the thought of Hugh Jackman as Van Helsing is somewhat tarnished by the movie, which was horrifically bad.
Wasn't it?
Oh, my gosh. So I have to go with Peter Cushing. I love Peter Cushing.
You chose Doctor Who and Grand Moff Tarkin. I understand. All right, Gene. Well, I think I've kept you long enough. Do you have a personal website or Twitter that you want to tell people about?
Sure. Well, we have, at Odyssey Workshop is the Twitter for Odyssey. We also have a Facebook page for Odyssey, facebook.com/Odyssey Workshop. You can find all of that stuff on our site, theodysseyworkshop.org. My personal site is genecavellos.com. So good luck with that spelling. It's JeanneCavellos.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on tonight. I really appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun.
I've had a great time talking to you. Thanks.
And remember, Garibaldi was framed.
But of course.
If I ever see you at a convention, I'm going to walk up and I'm going to say, hello, old friend. Thanks, Gene.
Thank you, Patrick.
The Babylon Project was our last best hope for peace. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for victory. The year is 2260. The place, Babylon 5.
Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends and have them tell their friends and so on and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF&F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
It's like talking to a child.
Magic wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
I don't even know what the horseman is.
And scene, you bastard.